Well, hey, everybody, it is great to see you, whether you're here in the room or joining us online after the sunset because you time shifted because it's a beautiful day. It is an honor to have you along for the ride. We're in the middle of a series called The Rest of the Story, and Drew didn't remember the title, but I did, but that's okay, right? And it's a series in which we're exploring some of the most iconic content in the Old Testament like you've never heard it before, because we're taking a cue from the Jewish tradition and approaching these stories literarily before we tried to read them literally, in order to discover why, in spite of the admittedly fantastic elements in them, the Jewish people have continued to tell them to their children for literally thousands of years. And in my experience, this approach is a really helpful thing to do, especially if you're someone who struggles to believe some of the more bizarre details in some of those Old Testament stories. Throughout the series, my hope is that you'll come to see what the Jewish people see when they read these stories, that the real miracles in them aren't necessarily the supernatural elements recorded. The real miracle is actually the message that these stories convey. So, that said, with the rest of our time together today, I want to introduce you to another one of those, or reintroduce you rather, to one of those iconic Old Testament characters. This is a dude I guarantee you've heard of, even if you have no background in church. Of course, I'm talking about Jonah, right? He was a Jewish prophet who lived 750 years or so before the time of Jesus. And if you grew up in church like I did, if you did your time with the flannograph boards, anybody with me on this? Yeah, and some of you are like, I was born in 2000, dude, I have no idea what you're talking about. Well, you can just ask ChatGPT, and you can get a whole history, okay, of the flannograph. But anyway, if you grew up in church like I did, you're probably familiar with Jonah's story, and you were more likely taught that the moral to Jonah's story was something like, don't disobey God or you might get swallowed by a whale. Good life lesson. But here's the thing. We've been in this series a few weeks now, and so you probably already suspect that it might be a mistake to approach the Jonah story that way, because you may very well miss the message that the author was trying to convey through it. And that message is what I want to explore with you today as we once again discover the rest of Jonah's story. And to get us going, I need to give you a little bit of a history lesson, because as it turns out, the Jonah narrative is set during a particular time in Israel's history. It was a season in which they were engaged in constant military conflict with a nation called Assyria. And Assyria was located in the land that we call Iraq today. But pretty much by all accounts, the ancient Assyrians were mean and nasty warriors, right? Apparently, they had even developed a technique by which they could remove all of the skin from one of their enemies while they were still alive. And all God's people said, ew. Exactly, yeah. I also found a quote from a prominent British historian named Simon Algum, and he notes this. He says, the Assyrians created the world's first great army and the world's first great empire. This was held together by two factors, their superior abilities in siege warfare and their reliance on sheer, unadulterated terror. It was Assyrian policy always to demand that examples be made of those who resisted them. This included deportations of entire peoples and horrific physical punishments. So, like I said, mean and nasty warriors. Anyway, it was during that period that Jonah emerged as a Jewish prophet. And as you might expect, he had been raised to strongly detest the Assyrians. Nonetheless, according to the story, God came to Jonah and told him that he wanted him to go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it because its wickedness has come up before me. And Nineveh was the capital of the Assyrian Empire. And so God essentially told Jonah, hey, I want you to go warn the people that you loathe to turn from their wicked ways. And as you might imagine, Jonah didn't want to, right? In fact, he so didn't want to that instead of doing what God had instructed him to do, we learn that Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. And you're like, I can't, but where's Tarshish? I'll show you. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. And it says, after paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed to Tarshish. And here's the key, to flee from the Lord. Like, God will never find me. Right. Now, It's easy to miss, but when Jonah decided to run from God, he really ran. I brought a map. Check this out. The author tells us that Jonah went to Joppa, which is a city on Israel's Mediterranean coast just south of the modern city of Tel Aviv, and he set sail for Tarshish, which was located some 2,500 miles to the west. Nineveh, on the other hand, was located 550 miles to the northeast. In other words, when Jonah ran as far as he could in the opposite direction, right? From the perspective of people in the ancient world, Jonah bought a ticket to the ends of the earth. And his message was clear. I'm not running away from the Assyrians. I'm running away from God. But as we've already suggested, that's not a great plan. And God, as it turns out, wasn't ready to release his prophet from his mission. And so God sent a storm that threatened to sink the ship on which Jonah was sailing. And here's what's so interesting. Because of the way ancient people viewed the world, the other guys on the ship, like the non-religious guys, began to ask one another why the gods were angry with them. And eventually, Jonah raised his hand and said, "It's me," right? And in an all too intentional lapse of compassion, they threw Jonah overboard. At which point, the Lord provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish for 3 days and three nights. Like you do, right? So, now I absolutely love what comes next, because as the narrative continues, we learn that after 72 hours in the belly of the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. I wonder what he said, right? And in response to this prayer, God commanded the fish, and this is the literal translation from the Hebrew, to vomit Jonah out onto dry land. And then Jonah made the long journey to Nineveh to deliver God's message. And in a truly shocking turn of events, the people of Nineveh, the people of Assyria, this fierce warrior race who ruled through terror and siege, responded by repenting. They started to do the things that God asked them to do, which should have been a good thing for a prophet of God, right? But nonetheless, Jonah's story ends with Jonah being absolutely furious with God's decision to show the Assyrian people mercy. Like, God, I love that you're merciful, but please don't be merciful to them. It's a bizarre narrative. And if you're familiar with it, you know that, as we've said, it's usually told in a way that emphasizes what we can learn from Jonah's disobedience. But here's the thing. If we were to ask the people of ancient Israel what they thought when they first heard this story, we'd learn pretty quickly that, well, they wouldn't have judged Jonah for running away from his God-given mission. In fact, they would have said, I would have done the same thing. Like, it isn't just Jonah doesn't like the Assyrians. None of us like the Assyrians. And they would say, in fact, I think any Jewish person should do what Jonah did. And that said, where should we start to understand Jonah's story? Like, do we start with a whale, or is there something else that we're supposed to take out of this narrative? And I was ruminating on that this week, and it kind of hit me. I actually don't think that the strangest part of the Jonah story has anything to do with the whale. Like, the whale is like a side character. I think what's so strange about the story is the fact that the narrative messes with the normal categories of good and bad and right and wrong. I mean, think about it. In the story, the good guy, Jonah, like God's guy, who's supposed to be following God and talking to God and obeying God, is disobeying God and running from God. And Jonah, the guy who probably talked to God all the time, finds himself on a ship filled with pagans who never talked to God, but who, after the storm threatens their lives, started talking a lot to God. Well, Jonah remains silent until that moment after 3 days in the belly of the fish. And then, even after submitting to his God-given mission, Jonah reluctantly marched into the city of Nineveh with a message of grace and compassion that he didn't want to give to a group of people who were supposed to be the bad guys, and instead of being put off by the message, the bad guys actually received it. In fact, and this is fascinating, the king of Nineveh even issued a proclamation after hearing Jonah's message that went like this: "Do not let people or animals, herds or flocks taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink, nationwide fast. But let people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Yes, even the sheep, right? But let everyone call urgently on God. What God? Jonah's God. Then, he says, let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent when with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. And they did what the king had asked them to do, and God turned away from his wrath. In other words, the people of Nineveh cried out to the God of Israel and the God of Israel, and they turned away from their evil ways. In fact, they took his warning so seriously that their king stepped down from his throne, took off his royal robes, dressed in sackcloth, and sat down on a heap of ashes to embody the fact that he was mourning the sins of his people. I'm telling you, Jonah's story is bizarre, but not because of the whale. Not only because of the whale, right? It's bizarre because of the fact that the categories of good and bad are all messed up in it. And then, as the story continued, Jonah witnesses an absolutely miraculous transformation of this city that was, in his mind, beyond hope. And Jonah was absolutely livid about it. In fact, he was so upset at what happened, he told God, and check this out, isn't this what I said, Lord, when I was still at home? Like when you first said, go to Nineveh. That's what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish. I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sin and calamity. He's like, God, I knew you were going to do this. And then look at this. How upset was he? Now, Lord, take away my life, for it's better for me to die than to live. Isn't that fascinating? Jonah was so frustrated by the grace and compassion that God has shown to the Assyrians that he'd rather God just kill him than he would have to continue to witness it. He hated them that much. Here's the thing. I don't know if you caught this, but the fact that God did what he did for the Assyrians, it didn't even surprise Jonah. And it shouldn't have surprised Jonah, because Jonah had grown up hearing the story of Noah, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago. And so Jonah would have understood that God didn't desire to wipe people out. He wants to invite people in. That's the reason Jonah didn't want to deliver God's message to the Assyrians. He knew that God would be merciful to them. And Jonah wanted none of it. He didn't want God to love them like he loved him. He didn't want God to show compassion to them like he had shown compassion to him. To the point that he told God, just kill me now. I'd rather be dead than have to witness the people I loathe most loved by you. I'd rather be dead than have to witness the people I loathe the most loved by you. It's such a strange story. And I mean, yes, if we're being honest, it can even feel a bit like a fairy tale, because there are so many things in the story that just seem impossible. And yet, as I've said, the bizarre things in these stories that tend to cause us to stumble aren't the most bizarre things in these stories. Plus, one of the things we keep coming back to in this series is that none of these stories was written down because they were strange. They were written down because the ancient Jewish people understood them to be important and inspired. And so if we really want to get our minds around the message of this story, we need to ask, why was it passed on? And in order to do that, I want to remind you of one of the major themes that emerges throughout the Old Testament, namely that Israel was God's chosen nation, but they weren't chosen just to be chosen. They were chosen with a purpose, and they were called to be a light unto the world. They were called to reflect the light of their Creator to the nations of the world. God said it this way in a prophecy given through a man named Isaiah, who lived about 50 years or so after the time of Jonah. God said this to them. He says to Israel, I will make you a light for the Gentiles. That's the non-Jewish people. And look at this. That my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth. I want to be known by everyone everywhere, and I want you to be the one to share who I am. Israel was called by God to reflect his redeeming love to the nations of the world. And yet, if you were to read the Old Testament, you'd see that there were a lot of seasons in which they were not particularly interested in actually doing that. They didn't want to share God's message of mercy with the world because they were so offended by the world. And so I think the Jonah story was passed on from generation to generation because it reminded the people of Israel that their God was different
And as a result, they were supposed to be different too. It reminded them of their calling to love and forgive people, even people who they considered to be their enemies. It was God's way of saying, hey, can you please demonstrate the same grace you've received from me to others? Can you forgive those who seem unforgivable? Can you let go of what they have done to you so that I can do something through you that might change them and actually make the world, this world, a better place? I think that's why this story doesn't end with some kind of critical condemnation of Jonah. In fact, it ends with God asking Jonah a really important question. And after God asks Jonah this question, the camera fades to black. Like, we don't know what Jonah did. It's sort of like the question hangs because the author wants to ask the reader or the hearer, what are you going to do with this question? So here's the question. And it's specific, but you'll see it's also general. God asked Jonah, should I not have concern for the great city of Nineveh, in which there are more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left? Jonah, they don't know what truth is. And also many animals. He's like, shouldn't I have compassion on them like I've had compassion on you? It's like, okay, remember, Jonah, when I could have wiped you out, but instead I invited you in. Shouldn't I do the same for them? And the hard thing about this question, really the hard thing about this story, is that it's not just a question for Jonah, right? It's a question for you and me and anyone who has relationship with God through faith in Jesus. I mean, let us not forget that one day Jesus gathered his followers and he told them this. He says, I want you to love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. And pray for those who mistreat you. If I'd been sitting there, I would have thought, I don't think this is ever going to get off the ground, Jesus. You know what I mean? Are you kidding me? This is not natural. And Jesus says, no, this is better than natural. This is jumping into a totally different kingdom. And it's not the kingdom into which you were born. It's the kingdom into which you are being adopted. So Jesus told us to do this too, and that's why I think it's more than fair to suggest that God looks at us at times and says, with as much mercy and compassion and grace and love and kindness as I've extended to you, shouldn't I do the same to the person who hurt you? And shouldn't I do the same to the person who wronged you? Shouldn't I feel sorry for them as well? I mean, you've had seasons when you didn't know your right hand from your left. And the person who hurt you, maybe they're in a season the same way. So shouldn't I do for them what I've done for you? And I know those are tough questions to wrestle down. And I honestly think that's why when it comes to a story like this one, many people would rather argue about whether or not a big fish actually swallowed Jonah. Here's what I mean. It's way easier to make this a story about a whale than it is for someone to get their mind around God loving those they loathe and calling them to do the same. I actually think, I was thinking about this week, I actually think the whale in the Jonah story is a little bit like the flood in the Noah story, and here's what I mean by that. I don't know that you actually need to attach your faith to your ability to take every specific detail of a story like that literally. I think you can. It's not wrong to. And in fact, if you want to look at the story of Jonah and believe that it happened actually exactly as described, that a man spent 3 days inside of the belly of a whale, prayed to God, was vomited on a beach, and survived the whole thing, if that's where you are, that's great. In fact, there's a whole bunch of really smart Bible scholars, way smarter than me, who believe that and say you should too. At the same time, if the man swallowed by the whale thing is too hard for you to get your mind around, and you find yourself thinking something like, there's just no way. I have scientific evidence, right? I can talk to you about stomach acid and lung pressure. And you're like sitting next to that guy, aren't you? And you're like, yeah. And lung pressure and the depths of the sea and Jonah's head would have exploded. If that's what you think, I think that's fine too. In fact, there's Bible scholars who believe that and say that you should or could as well. But that said, I think it's a tragic mistake to boil down the Jonah story to a discussion of whether or not it actually happened. Like, people are literally walking away from their faith because some Christians seem uninterested in anything other than arguing about the details of stories like this, while entirely missing the point of these stories. Because the reality is the Jonah story, I mean, ancient story should have ended once and for all any discussions about good people or bad people or insiders or outsiders or us or them. It should have blown up all of our categories, but for some strange reason, people still want to spend their time arguing about whether the whale happened. And I'm telling you, I just don't think it's worth it. Here's what I know. When it comes to this story, the people of ancient Israel, the first people to hear this story, would not have argued about the whale. What would have kept them up at night would have been the idea that the people they loathe were loved by God. And so if you want something in this story to bother you, don't let it be the whale. Let it be that God is so much bigger than you thought he was. Because as it turns out, he really does love everyone everywhere. In the end, the Jonah narrative, if we read it as intended, it demolishes our biases and wrecks our categories. It takes God out of our corner and off our team and makes it clear that God is on everyone's team and he's for everyone and he wants to be on everyone's side. Even the ancient Assyrians. I'm telling you, if we could actually believe that in mass, it would change everything. And that's why I love these Old Testament narratives. I would argue that's why they survived. That's why they were written down. And that's why somebody decided that they should be included in the collection of books that we call the Old Testament of the Bible. That's why they've stood the test of time. And that's why I love them so much, and I hope you will too. Because, yeah, they are really old, and they're strange. They were written down at a different time in a different culture, but you see, what we find when we ask ourselves, why was this written down and what is it ultimately about, we find something that's as new and needed and progressive and enlightened as ever. We find that God, the Creator, is bigger than we thought he was, and that he wants to have a relationship with messy, complicated people, which is really great because we all are messy, complicated people. And we find that God says, I know that life in this broken world as a broken person is hard, and I know there's going to be times where you find people that you just loathe. And I know there's some people that have just gone too far in your eyes, but you need to understand you're not seeing the whole story. They have not gone too far in my eyes. And so, yeah, these stories can be hard to understand, but they're so much better than fairy tales, and they're so much bigger than folklore or myth or legend. These stories affirm that God is invested in and interested in you and me. And he's on our side no matter what goes on in our lives and no matter what we face or how we feel. And that, well, that's worth writing down and that's worth passing on. Because that, my friends, is a message that people need now more than ever. And that, my friends, is the rest of the story of Jonah. Thank you. But before I let you go, I want to invite you to pause for just a moment and ask yourself, what if God really is bigger than you thought he was? Not just in power or knowledge, but in compassion and patience and his ability to handle your doubts and your questions and your fears. What if he's more? Like, what would that change? How would that change how you think about yourself? How would that change how you think about him? How would that change how you think about other people, especially people for whom you struggle to show grace? And we all have those people. Well, in just a moment, I'm going to invite you to stand, and if you're willing, to sing a song together. The song is called Bigger Than I Thought You Were. We sang it a few weeks ago, and it's just been haunting me ever since. It's a song for those times when we find ourselves just overwhelmed with God's love and his grace and his mercy. And we're so overwhelmed, and we don't know what to do, and then then it comes to the bridge in the song, and the bridge is my favorite part, and it just says, I will rest in the Father's hands. I'll leave the rest in the Father's hands. It's like this beautiful invitation to surrender to God's will, to surrender to God's love, to release control of the uncontrollable to him, and to trust that his way is the way. And so with that, if you're willing and able, I'd love you to stand and sing this song with me, and then I'll return to close our time in prayer.
So I stop all the conversations.
just a moment. We'll close our time in prayer. But if you came into this space and you just need to speak with someone or pray with someone, we'll have some friends that'll be under the screen to the left. But let me close our time. Father, I don't know much, but one thing that is undeniable is that you are bigger and better than we can possibly imagine. And we see that so vividly in the sacrifice of your Son for all of us unworthy people. So thank you for your love that is perfect of imperfect people. And thank you for that call, not just to receive your love, but to extend your love to the most challenging people we run into in this life. And it feels impossible, and yet by your Spirit, anything is possible. And so I pray that this week we might hear his voice once again, maybe more clearly, encouraging us to do the hard things that love requires. But we thank you for preserving the ancient story, the beautiful story of Jonah. Thank you for his mission. Thank you for his message. And thank you for being bigger than we can possibly imagine. It is in the name above all names, the name of your Son, our Savior, Jesus Christ, we pray. And everyone said, amen. Grace and peace, friends. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next week.